This weekend marks a big change for people around the world who are Catholic and who celebrate Mass in English. The words and music of the English Mass are now different thanks to the first major change to the texts in 40 years. As NPR's Barbara Bradley Haggerty reports, the new, more formal liturgy is already causing a stir.
It was an unusual homily, but these are unusual times for the Catholic Church.
Let's practice it. The Lord be with you.
On a recent Sunday, Father Chester Snyder and the parishioners at St. Joseph's Church in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, did a trial run through the new Mass.
You're pretty good at this.
As of this weekend, the liturgy has a new vocabulary. Not an overhaul, but enough to trip people up, especially those who have the old one memorized.
I believe in one God.
For example, in the Nicene Creed, the old version said Jesus is one in being with the Father. The new version says Jesus is consubstantial with the Father. In the old Mass, people confessed they sinned through my own fault. Now people say they have greatly sinned through my fault, through my fault, through my most grievous fault, as they strike their chests. Father Snyder was shocked at the changes at first, but then he considered what the Mass celebrates, the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross.
And that's not everyday stuff.
He says it's a profound mystery.
So when we enter into the realm of mystery, we try to have a language that is a little bit different than what we use in the marketplace or at the football stadium or even in our everyday conversation.
Which is precisely what the Vatican is trying to achieve. When the Latin Mass was translated into English 40 years ago, it was done relatively quickly and everyone knew it would be revised. The new translation is closer to the Latin in both words and sentence structure. Of course there's a learning curve, member Janet Beveridge says, but it's nothing compared to the shift from Latin to English. And she likes mixing it up.
It's good because it makes you be on your feet and pay attention to what you're doing and not take it for granted. And I never want to take my faith for granted.
But Monica Malpezzi thinks the new language is stilted and confusing. It will only create a barrier between people and God.
If we have to scramble for understanding in what our prayer life is, I think that it'll make it harder for us to feel that God is right there with us.
Malpezzi echoes the sentiment of many priests across the country. They say if the new people's prayers are awkward, the priests are sometimes unintelligible. Bishop Donald Troutman, who used to chair the Bishop's Committee for the Liturgy, says priests now have to recite some sentences that are 90 words long. And he says sometimes the new translation is not faithful to the Bible. For example, it has Jesus, a poor carpenter, sipping from a precious chalice during the Last Supper.
It's a drinking cup. It's a vessel. It's not a chalice.
Troutman says even Indiana Jones got that one right.
That's the cup of a carpenter.
He selected a wooden cup as the Holy Grail.
You have chosen wisely.
But Bishop Troutman's concerns go beyond vocabulary to theology. He cites where the new translation says Jesus died, quote, for you and for many.
In preaching, we will hear that Jesus died for all people. But at the altar, we will hear it, Jesus died for many. For whom did he not die?
Father Michael Ryan has similar reservations.
It seems that the Latin's more important than the theology. That's a pity.
Ryan is pastor of St. James Cathedral in Seattle. He sees this as a power play by conservatives in the Vatican trying to rein in the English-speaking world. He says Vatican II wanted the liturgy to exhibit, quote, noble simplicity.
This is anything but that. No, it's a total move away from the teaching of the Second Vatican Council.
There's a kind of paranoia about all of this.
Jeffrey Tucker is managing editor of the magazine Sacred Music.
Oh, look, we don't want to go back to the pre-Vatican II days with, you know, nuns that hit us with rulers and where the priest is, you know, fussing at us for our sins all the time or whatever. All we're really saying here is that we want church to feel and sound like church.
Tucker says the new words and music are an overdue adjustment from a liturgy that he calls too chatty. Monsignor Rick Hilgartner agrees. He's overseeing the change in liturgy for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. And he asks, just how accessible does a liturgy have to be?
People might say, well, what about children? Well, so do we then say that the whole liturgy has to be at a third grade reading level? How long would that sustain adults in the faith?
Hilgartner says the new words simply reflect the maturing of the American faith, and he asks people to be patient.
And I would hope people wouldn't Monday morning quarterback this on November 28th. And I think we all need to give each other some time to learn our parts so that we cannot just be focused on words, but ultimately get to a point that the words can start to speak to our hearts.
Glory to God in the highest.
The regulars at St. Joseph's are already committing the new words, music, and rhythms to heart. But this weekend may be disorienting for the millions of Catholics who reserve their worship for the holiday season, which begins, yes, this weekend. Barbara Bradley Haggerty, NPR News.
It's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Guy Raz. Last weekend, vampires and penguins took over the Cineplex. Thanksgiving has brought a Muppet invasion, so what next? Well, there are 37 days left in 2011 and almost that many movies waiting to open. So we asked Bob Mondello for a selective preview.
How do you like your Steven Spielberg? Classy and epic like Saving Private Ryan, or raucous and comic like Indiana Jones? Actually, this year, you're okay either way because in the space of a single week, Spielberg will open two potential blockbusters. The Indiana Jones-ish one is a treasure hunt based on a comic book, The Adventures of Tintin.
I don't think you realize this, but you're about to walk into a whole mess of danger.
It's Spielberg's first foray into 3D motion capture technology.
Look at this.
The results are pretty gorgeous. Nonstop action on several continents, not to mention in the air and at sea. And a mere 4 days after Tintin opens, the director will be back with a drama that's a bit more hooves on the ground, as it were. A battlefield saga set in World War I about a British youngster and a noble steed.
What is it?
It's a horse they find wandering about in no man's land.
What kind of an horse?
A miraculous kind of an horse, be my guess.
War Horse is also a hit play on Broadway at the moment, and Spielberg's not the only one who's looking stageward for the holidays. There'll be star-studded Shakespeare, Coriolanus, which will mark the directing debut of Ralph Fiennes, and the Broadway smash Gods of Carnage will hit the screen as Just Carnage, a comedy in which two couples meet to discuss a fight between their 11-year-old sons.
Do you know what they were arguing about? Because Ethan won't say a word.
Ethan wouldn't let Zachary be a part of his gang.
Ethan has a gang?
And he called him a snitch.
Did you know that Ethan had a gang?
No, but I'm thrilled to hear it.
Why are you thrilled?
Because I had one. I was the leader.
So was I.
By the end, director Roman Polanski will have these folks behaving even more childishly than their kids. Any more childish, in fact, and you'd need to call a sitter, though probably not the one from The Sitter, who's lazy and irresponsible, as played by Jonah Hill. Other misbehaving grown-ups include a mean-spirited writer of teen fiction in Young Adult, who returns to her hometown to reclaim her high school boyfriend.
You can come to the city with me like we always planned.
Mavis, I'm a married man.
No, we can beat this thing together.
As written by Diablo Cody and played by Charlize Theron, this is a woman on a mission. Men try to stop her at their peril, and that's something you might also say of men who come up against Maggie Thatcher, at least as she's pictured in the film Iron Lady. We meet the British Prime Minister when she's in her dotage, remembering when she was first being groomed to run for elective office.
That hat has got to go, and the pearls, but the main thing is your voice. It's too high and it has no authority.
I may be persuaded to surrender the hat. The pearls, however, are absolutely non-negotiable.
Meryl Streep transforming herself again.
That's the tone that we want to strike.
You can't hand Streep an Oscar nomination just yet, though, because Glenn Close has an even bigger transformation up her sleeve. In Albert Nobbs, she plays a woman who managed for 30 years in 19th century Ireland to pass as a man.
Jesus, you're a woman.
You won't tell on me.
What's your name?
Albert.
Your real name?
Albert.
As long as we're introducing possible Best Actress nominees, let's include the English language girl with a dragon tattoo, Rooney Mara.
Hey, hey, who do you think you are?
Can I call you Elizabeth? I want you to help me catch a killer of women.
That other voice is Daniel Craig, and they're directed by David Fincher, who proved with Zodiac and Seven that he knows his way around a suspense film. There are quite a lot of those in the holiday mix, including a fresh version of an espionage classic by John le Carré.
All I want from you is one code name. Tinker. Tailor. Soldier. Spy.
Gary Oldman plays George Smiley, stepping into shoes once occupied by Alec Guinness. For those who prefer a pop take on covert operations, Tom Cruise and his Impossible Missions Force are back in Ghost Protocol, trying presumably not to become ghosts.
The Russians are classifying this as an undeclared act of war. The blame points to you and your team. The president has initiated Ghost Protocol. The entire IMF has been disavowed.
So what happens now?
Your mission, should you choose to accept it.
Oops. Well, that's awkward. Guess they're on their own. Okay, let's shift gears for a sec. This being Hollywood's prestige season, when everyone's jockeying for awards consideration, the art house crowd will have plenty to choose from, including A Separation, about a family in Iran faced with a life-altering decision, Shame, in which Michael Fassbender plays a sex addict whose life is in crisis, In the Land of Blood and Honey, an ethnic cleansing drama that finds Angelina Jolie not in front of the camera but behind it as both writer and director, and Pariah, the story of an African-American teen who's growing up lesbian in Brooklyn.
I'm really sorry I bugged out. It's just I didn't know that you... I wasn't expecting that.
First kiss? It's cool.
Her parents don't think it's so cool, which explains the title, Pariah. Other stories dealing with family crises include Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, based on a novel about the aftermath of 9/11. We Need to Talk About Kevin, in which Tilda Swinton tries to understand why her teenage son went on a killing spree. We Bought a Zoo, based on a memoir about a family that, well, buys a zoo. And though I hesitate to mention this one, the saga of a long-planned family cruise ship vacation that goes terribly awry.
Alvin!
Chipwrecked with singing chipmunks. Not the way you want to spend the holidays? Well, there are other horrors at the Cineplex. Alien invaders, abandoned children, a film directed by Madonna. Happily, there are also heroes you can count on, among them Sherlock Holmes and Watson in A Game of Shadows.
What are we up against here?
The most formidable criminal mind in Europe.
Professor James Moriarty.
If we can stop him, we shall prevent the collapse of Western civilization. No pressure.
No pressure at all. Except maybe at the box office. I'm Bob Mondello.
This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Tony Cox, sitting in for Michelle Martin. Today, we are pausing to give thanks. And, of course, we're also taking time to enjoy turkey and all of the trimmings and watch some football as well. But it's also time again for Black Friday, when millions of Americans trade cranberry sauce and stuffing for credit cards and shopping bags. Black Friday is the traditional start of the holiday shopping season. Many of us will get caught up in the frenzy and spend more than planned, maybe even more than we can afford. To get some friendly advice, though, on how to avoid all of that, we are joined now by consumer credit expert John Olsheimer. He is also the author of You're Nothing But a Number. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So as soon as the store doors open, John, Americans enticed by deep discounts will begin giving their wallets a real workout. Some will pay with cash, others will swipe credit cards. What should people keep in mind as they make their way to the register?
Well, they should be very careful. And most people seem to enter a form of temporary financial insanity beginning on Black Friday and will spend an enormous amount of money. And this makes them susceptible to the retail credit card offers that you almost always get at the register when you're trying to check out. However, this year, they're going to be especially aggressive. Generally, 10% is the discount they're offering if you'll open a new card. This year, we're already seeing discounts in the 15 to 20% range, which sounds very compelling to the consumer because you're going to save 20% off of whatever you purchase that day, which is very nice, of course. However, if you peel back the onion and look at the terms of those cards, they're absolutely not terribly advantageous to consumers because the interest rates are almost always well into the 20% range, and the credit limits on those cards are almost always below $1,000. They seem to have become a one-size-fits-all type of credit card product where normally to get interest rates well into the 20s and very low credit limits, you've got to have bad credit. That's a subprime type of credit card. However, they've become almost accepted in the retail card environment that people even with fantastic credit are willing to accept credit cards that have these very subprime types of terms, which makes it very expensive if you do choose to carry the debt from one month to the next.
Is there a situation where signing up for one of these cards could actually work to someone's benefit, and what would that be?
Well, look, the only real benefit to the consumer for signing up for one of these cards is the same-day discount. And if they're buying something very expensive, a flat-panel television or a couch, something that's, you know, 20% off is going to save them hundreds of dollars, then that's really where the benefit ends. The minute you start rolling that balance from one month to the next with such a high interest rate, you really chew up that discount, and eventually the cards are going to flip into the favor of the issuer, and you're going to find yourself actually spending more for the item than what you thought you were going to get, even with the discount.
There's so many areas, John, I want to hit with you. Let's talk about this one for a moment, the one that I always see at this time of the year. No payment, no interest for a year. What about those?
Oh, those are very, very compelling, aren't they? Free money, no payment for a year. I'm not sure why that entices people so much. I mean, you're eventually going to have to pay it. It's just delaying the inevitable. The problem with those type of accounts is that you end up opening essentially a store credit card. They will max out the card and put whatever the purchase is on the card. And then you end up with that debt on your credit report for the entire year with no balance being paid, meaning that the balance does not come down at all. And it normally does in a normal credit card environment. It's what we call stagnant debt. And stagnant debt is not good for your credit scores. And if it's going to damage your credit scores, it's going to do so the entire year until we have this conversation next Black Friday. So I would suggest that you thank the clerk for the offer, but avoid those types of in-store offers when possible.
Well, let's talk about this scenario, John, for a moment. Suppose I don't have any choice. I have to use a credit card because I don't have any cash to pay for things for Christmas that I want to buy, and I am going to buy things for Christmas for my family and kids, et cetera, et cetera. Now, what kind of credit card should I use? If I'm at, let's say, Macy's, should I use a Macy's card, or if I have one of the other cards, Visa, MasterCard, American Express, should I use one of those instead?
I would absolutely, every day of the week, suggest that you use a general use credit card like a Visa, MasterCard, Discover, or Amex over the retail store card for two primary reasons. First off, the interest rates on those cards are almost always going to be better than the interest rate on a retail store card. You can have a Visa with an interest rate as low as 7.9% if you have good credit. Even the average interest rate, according to the Federal Reserve, is somewhere between 12 and 13%, which is half of what it's going to be on a retail store credit card. So it's cheaper to carry the debt if you choose to do so. Second, the credit limit on those types of general use cards are going to be much higher than what you're going to get on a retail store card. So from a credit scoring perspective, you're leveraging less of the available credit of the card, which is better for your credit score. So it's really a win for the consumer to just simply use one of the general use credit cards that are already in their wallet.
This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Tony Cox sitting in for Michelle Martin, and we are talking with John Ulzheimer. He is a financial expert who specializes in consumer credit. We are talking about Black Friday and how to keep yourself out of the poorhouse by misusing those credit cards in your purse and in your wallet. What about, John, those ubiquitous gift cards? The grocery stores these days are full of every kind of gift card that you can imagine. Are these a good deal, or should we avoid them?
I love gift cards, and I realize that they're not terribly personal when you're giving them to someone, but it is truly, in my mind anyways, the bulletproof gift. Because you don't have to worry about sizes, you don't have to worry about styles, you don't have to worry about colors, and you don't have to worry about somebody returning it if they don't want it. The fee that you pay for buying one of those gift cards is generally very, very modest, a couple of dollars at most. And to use the gift card, the recipient, you've got some pretty aggressive protections under the Credit Card Act that was passed just last year. And even if you, for example, lose the card for a few years or just simply choose not to use it, when you choose to get around to using it, it's going to have almost the entire value that was put on it when it was given to you in the first place. And we couldn't have said this last year at this time because the value could go away. Now the Card Act protects the recipient. So I really love gift cards because of those reasons.
Does it make a difference where you buy the gift card? Because since you can buy so many different types at the grocery store, as we said, do you have the same protection buying it there as if you would if you bought it at the retailer that it's for?
You certainly do. And I'll put it as simple as I possibly can. A gift card is a gift card is a gift card wherever you buy it from. The protections are equally aggressive and equally consumer friendly, regardless of where that gift card comes from.
One of the other things we are seeing coming back into the marketplace this year, this season, during these tough economic times, John, is the layaway. Is that a good thing? Or no.
Isn't that great? The layaway, the blast from the past, credit before credit became credit. layaway is actually not a bad deal for a couple of reasons. It completely takes the credit application and credit report out of the equation. It is not a true credit vehicle in the traditional sense of the word. The only downside that some people have with respect to layaway is that you are charged a small fee to set up the layaway plan with the merchant. But if you compared that to the amount of interest that you'd pay if you were to buy the item on a true credit card and then revolve the balance for a few months, it's actually cheaper in many cases to do it on layaway. Some retailers are charging you $5 to set up the layaway plan. Here's the downside with layaway. In the olden days, when layaway was popular a couple of decades ago, you could actually take months to pay off the item and then actually take it home. They're not giving you that type of leeway any longer. If you sign up for a layaway plan, you better have it in your budget so that you're going to be able to make payments, maybe four or five of them over a small month or 2 month period, because that's really all they're going to give you in order to pay off the item and come pick it up.
Let's talk about buying online. Is that the way to go now, or is it too close to Christmas in order to buy something and have it in your hand in time for Christmas morning?
We are still absolutely safe enough to buy items online and get them well in advance of Christmas. You'll even see some stores advertising that if you buy the item 3 or 4 days before Christmas, they'll have it there in time to stick it under the tree. Also, free shipping. So think of the $3.50 per gallon that you're not spending to drive to the mall for half an hour, find a parking spot, buy the item, and come home. Let someone else do that for you. Free shipping is fantastic, and that's generally something that retailers use kind of as an added benefit for going online and buying and purchasing goods versus having to go to the mall and actually buy them there.
John Elsheimer is a consumer credit expert. He joined us from the studios of Georgia Public Radio in Atlanta. John, thank you very much, and happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thank you for having me, and happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
Yesterday on this program, Todd Coleman of Sevier Magazine may have changed your life with his garlic trick. He showed us how to peel a dozen or more cloves in mere seconds. Well, today, it's cherry tomatoes.
Well, cherry tomatoes, they're very small. They're about the size of a clove of garlic. And they're sort of laborious to slice one at a time.
They're a pain.
It's a pain. It takes a long
time.
So I learned this trick. You take two plastic lids to takeout containers, much like the ones you get in a hot and sour soup from the Chinese restaurant. Mm. Put one down with the edge facing up. There's a little ridge there. And I fill it up. You can also use Tupperware tops that have a ridge at the top. Fill it up with cherry tomatoes. Invert the other one over the top. And it leaves this very small path. You want me to do it?
Yeah. This is cool because I save these things for my kids' projects, but this is like a grown-up project, and there's something more sad. I actually have a little container of cherry tomatoes with me here in the studio, too, and I have two lids as well, so I'm going to do this with you.
Great.
We're going to go together. Oh, I just spilled it. There's cherry tomatoes all over the place. Robert Siegler is going to come in here and sit on a cherry tomato next week. Accidentally, he's going to find it. Put the cherry tomato in here. All right. We have two lids, Todd.
Yes.
And you have two lids. And you kind of presumably got to sort of hold them down, right?
Yeah. So I'm filling up. I have about 20 tomatoes in there. Mine are pretty small. And then I'm going to invert the second lid and press it on top. And I hold it down. And I just take my knife and I just saw or slice right through.
Okay. I'm going to try this too.
And it just halves them all.
Wow, that's awesome. You could throw this right into the salad.
This is also, you know, something, you know, I have a daughter named Eve. This is something, because of the plastic lids, it makes it safe for her to do. So I have her do this for me when we're making a salad together.
That's a great idea. And you've just saved, like, I don't know, 5-10 minutes?
Yeah.
Which is a lot of time in the kitchen when you're doing pre-prep.
Yeah. I'm saving lives here, Guy.
You're changing and saving them. Well, these are all awesome tips and tricks. If you come across another one of these every 10-year things, will you call us and let us know?
Absolutely.
That's Todd Coleman. He's the executive food editor at Saveur Magazine. Todd, thanks so much.
Thank you.